Bărut dis diu tumca sobleanc. Ani calcea morie mai festaci tumca servi serv concni locanc ashirvada ani besama. Aicho program just like last week's is a current affairs program. Ya programmer ami kanchaye partik ya candidate ak promote karna. We seek to know more about the candidate, his or her values and principles, the policies of his or her party, and share with them the needs of this community. Amcha studiont aaz asa Denise Roche, Green Party chi candidate for Auckland Central. Denise's parliamentary responsibilities are spokesperson for immigration, Pacific peoples, ethnic affairs, workplace relations, and safety and waste management. An ticha sangata charcha ani wulung amcha community inta nasat Sandra Narona and Xavier Braganza as Hazar Asad. So Denise, I hope it is fine with you to call you Denise. Welcome to our Konkani radio program, Sushega Tanpar.
Well, thank you very much. It's a real privilege to be here. And yes, it's fine to call me Denise. Deo Boru Distumka Sogliang.
Fantastic. You really picked it up, huh? With those few tips to you. Okay, here we go. We roll the dice and... Sandra and Xavier are going to sort of ask you a few personal party and community needs questions.
Welcome, Denise. Tell us more about yourself, your profession, your family, how you came to be in politics.
Oh, sure. So I've been living on Waiheke Island for the last about 20 years now, but I have lived mostly around the Auckland Central sort of area for about the last 29 years altogether. But I grew up in Hamilton, in Frankton, in the railway settlement there, in a very large family. I've got eight brothers and sisters. And so we're kind of, my dad has Māori ancestry as well, and we're Catholic as well, so I guess that explains some of it. I have two children, Matariki, who's 18, and Joe, who's 23. And they're both at university. But I came to politics quite late, really. And basically what happened was that I was sort of challenged by my community to, if I really wanted to make some difference, to actually put myself forward to, you know, to sit at the decision-making table. And so in my mid-40s, when my kids were a bit older, I put myself forward to stand for Auckland City Council, which I won by 11 votes. So for 3 years, they called me Landslide Roach. And so from there, it kind of escalated. I got more involved with party politics, and I'm a campaigner from way back, so I really enjoy campaigning. And it's been a real privilege to be a Member of Parliament as a list MP for the Greens for the last 6 years now.
Thanks, Denise. It's really nice to have you here with us, and I'm pretty sure the Konkani community are listening to you, and they are definitely one who lack green as far as their connections with the colour green. They love to grow stuff, they love to plant stuff, and that's where the link is. But I like the nice, and I'm going to use the word nice word to describe your progression. And I like the way you've moved from the unions to the school boards, and then you've been a member of the local boards, and then finally a list MP. And you've got into this great ability to the sense of social justice. And that's as per what your profile says. I just want to like to know, is this fervor or passion of yours for social justice, does this have an influence with your Catholic upbringing, or is it the tough environments of growing up in a society which is in a railway settlement, or the surroundings around you?
That's a really good question. I think it's a little bit of both. So growing up in the railway settlements, very working class, my dad and my mum both were union members, which is how I developed my understanding of trade unions. But I do think the Catholic upbringing did have an impact. That whole moral values around looking after other people, which fits very, very well with the union tradition of collectivism, and also in Te Ao Māori, which is also about us, not about I. So I think the Catholic upbringing does give you a really solid grounding in caring for other people and being compassionate. And I think the work that's happened with the Catholic Church over the last few decades in liberation theology is in ensuring people's human rights has been really, really positive.
Denise, it's an interesting time to be in politics. If you look all over the world, there's so much of change. The balance of power, the governance in so many countries has shifted from being career politicians to career business people. You know, you're seeing more and more such people getting a foothold in the parliament now. With your focus being putting the power back into the hands of the community instead of being dissipated by interest groups, what has your experience been in this area so far?
Well, what I've noticed is that, and one of the things that I absolutely support from the Green Party is that we believe that local decisions or decision-making should be made by the people who are affected by the decision-making. And that's one of the principles of our charter document. That there's been a real capture of politicians, particularly and government and government departments by lobbyists, who have a door into those who make the decisions, into their workplaces and their ability to influence the decisions that are made by government. And I guess some examples of that would be the way this government changed the law, our industrial relations law, to suit the needs of Warner Brothers with The Hobbit. And another one was changing our laws around gambling to suit the needs of Sky City in exchange for a convention centre. And those things really worry me, because I believe that Parliament, it's called the House of Representatives, so it needs people who represent all sorts of different communities. So career politicians, I think, is not the way to go, because it's not necessarily having those connections back into the communities. I'm heartened by our MMP system, which means that we have more women in Parliament. We have more ethnic community communities represented in Parliament. We have more Māori in Parliament. But we need more of that to ensure that those voices are represented and heard. So I guess we can look forward to a Konkani representative sooner or later.
As Denise, it's good that you make this point about it's not the I, but it's us. And that's a great feeling when we talk about a community, which is always about us. But one can see as we track your record, we can see that this is going to be your third election at the parliament level and at the parliamentary level. And, you know, your personal vote share, it sort of has declined from 13.43% in 2008 to 7.63% in 2014. Now, I'm wondering if there's a bit of an introspection with you and your party, okay? Because the party vote in your electorate is static at 2011. At the 2011 level, at around 22%. So, why do you think this is? And what about the electorate? Why is this in the electorate? Any introspection? Any kind of strategies to move from there?
Yes, it's deliberate. I'm very proud of the fact that we've been able to reduce my candidate vote since 2008, and we've done that because the Greens campaign for the party vote, which has stayed static, as you said, between 2011 and 2014. The reason it stayed static and didn't grow, the party vote, was because we lost, we had a boundary change, and so we lost a very big proportion of very pro-Green, and Labor actually, but pro-Green area of Grey Lynn went to Mount Albert, which is a safe Labor seat, and Auckland Central picked up some little bits of Parnell and Epsom, which are traditionally very National Party seats. So I'm very proud of the fact that we actually maintained our party vote at 22% between 2011 and 2014. But it's been a deliberate strategy to try and reduce the number of candidate votes for me, because it's not the candidate vote that would get me into Parliament. It is the party vote. So we only have list MPs in Parliament, our 14 members of Parliament, which is, we got just under 11% of the vote nationally, which is how we got 14 members. And those members are determined by our membership. So it's our party members who decide are going to be the MPs. The candidates, I run as a candidate, but really it's so that I can give voice to the policies of our party while we're campaigning, because otherwise we wouldn't be allowed on the platform and nobody would know what we're saying. So that's why we run candidates. They're the vehicle for us to campaign.
Just on that note, Denise, I leave a thought with you, or leave a question with you as such. Why do people run after the party vote instead of the candidate vote, and thereby sort of break up the vote bank? Why don't they consolidate right in the beginning and capture a whole of the party vote? I will leave that question with you as we play this song about Wasai Saroni. Wasai Saroni.
Wasai tahai mi roni, ai lawa tum kengawan, gazwala umra chapani, balay ek pari maje manan, tila bagun kai sangu tumana, सोन लागले ती चेरुपान अरे बावंदो नको पुंगरू गपचुप सांगा तिचे कानान वसायचा हाय मी रॉनी आय लव आज तुमचे गावान गाजवाला उमराचा पाणी भले एक परी माझे मनान बघून तिला येरामी झालू काय नाचते पगाती ठेक्यान आणि त्या बाजाचे ठेक्यावर काय तिची पैज न हालतान आईस वाटते का चांदणी आज डेवले तिचे पाया वसायचा हाय मी रॉनी आय लव आज तुमचे गावान गाजवाला उमराचा पाणी भले एक परी माझे मनान मातीची गागर तिचे माथ्यावर चाललंय काय ती नखऱ्यान डोले तिचे काय चमकतान दैशी नखीत राहणा बालान मातीची गागर तिचे माथ्यावर चाललंय काय ती नखऱ्यान डोले तिचे काय चमकतान दैशी नखीत राहणा बालान तिचे मयेचे रंगान फसलो तिचे चालान बघून तिची चवानी हिवारा भल्ला माझे अंगान
सहायो रानी आसैलाई आमचे गावान अरे भावान दोनो को कुंगरू गपचुप सांगा तिचे कानान
दिशेने नवरी जोरामचा काय सोबे ऐसं वाटे आज माना मी बी नवरा निघे आणि ती काय दिशेने नवरी जोरामचा काय सोबे दोघ आम्ही जोऱ्याशी देवलन बांधू गाठी आणि मयेशी गाजू आमचे दिस न राती
तुम्ही ऐकतात सुशेगा दनपार प्रोग्राम ऑन 104.6 प्लॅनेट एफ एम अँड वी आर इन डिस्कशन विथ डिनीस रोश ऑफ ग्रीन पार्टी अबाउट द फोर्थ कमिंग इलेक्शन्स अँड हर प्रॉस्पेक्ट्स इन द इलेक्शन्स विथ सँड्रा नरोना अँड झेवियर ब्रिगेन्झा. डिनीस, आय लेफ्ट विथ यू विथ दॅट क्वेश्चन ऑफ वाय डोंट यू सॉर्ट ऑफ कंबाईन विथ द अदर पार्टीज अँड गॅदर मोर पार्टी वोट्स रादर दॅन फोकसिंग ऑन कॅन्डिडेट्स.
Yeah, so I guess the answer to that is that we have a memorandum of understanding with Labor that we are both campaigning to change the government, but we're not endorsing any of their candidates because they are, it's not quid pro quo, they're not endorsing our claim for a party vote, given that's the only way we do things. But I do note that, you know, in some electorates there are arrangements where the parties get together and make deals, like in Epsom, where National Party supporters are encouraged to vote for the ACT candidate. And similarly, that was the case in Ohariu with the United Futures, Peter Dunn, but he's since pulled out. and to give their party vote to National. So the party vote determines the size of Parliament, and that's why we go for that.
Right. Now, we've seen that your party has remained unchanged with 14 seats in 2011, 2014, with a vote share of just 11%. There's been lots of turmoil in your party recently, especially to do with senior leaders. What do you think will happen in terms of the impact on your voting population? And has the stability been restored? All the credibility issues, have they been addressed, do you think?
I think they have. And it's a... 2 weeks is a long time in Parliament, really, as we know, and anything could happen. But, I mean, we're very proud of our track record. We've been in Parliament for 21 years, and during that time we have a system where we have co-leaders, and there's only ever been 5 co-leaders in that whole 21 years. So we do have that stability. So it was unprecedented what happened in the wake of the media intrusion into Metiria's life when she announced that she had overclaimed benefit in the 1990s, and then the subsequent fallout with our with two of our male MPs who who basically withdrew. So I think in the period since then, we have really focused very hard on our core campaign messaging and the areas that we're focusing on, which is families and poverty. It's cleaning up our rivers, and it's also on climate change.
See, Denise, when people go to the polls for elections, they keep two things in mind, and that's for any party. They would like to have a good government. When I say good, it really means good to get to the needs of the people. So it's for the people and by the people, as we know that. And the second thing is they would like to have something for themselves, which is something profitable for them, for their lives, for their daily lives, maybe financially, maybe socially, or maybe in their work and their progression in education and so on. Now, we see that the Green Party, your agenda, we really don't find a kind of a... what's your tagline or what's your catch line or what should I say? Where can someone put a foothold on what exactly does the party want? Because your posters, we talk about great together on some of your posters, and then we see something else on others. And in comparison, sometimes... You feel that the Green Party is not doing such a good job as it should in comparison to others. So what's your party main tagline?
Well, thanks for that feedback, actually. It's really good to get that from you, to understand that it's not as clear as it should be. And I think that reflects the messiness that occurred over the last few weeks. So the tagline was great together, but then when our co-leader resigned, we kind of figured that probably wasn't the best message. And so we went through a reset, and our tagline now is Love New Zealand. And so what we're saying is that voting for the Greens is the opportunity to change the government and for there to be a truly progressive government. And that is a government that will end poverty. Governments create poverty. Governments can't end poverty. That is a government that has significant plans to clean up our rivers and waterways. And that is a government that actually takes real action on climate change, because it's not just the biggest threat that is facing our population and our planet. It's also the biggest economic opportunities of a generation. So, I mean, I can see that some people might vote because of self-interest, but what I'm hearing when I'm door knocking is that even very well-off people are very concerned about the gap between the very rich and the very poor, because it means an unstable community. And when we have an underclass of dissatisfied people, then it undermines the safety of all of us.
That's right, yeah.
Now, you've mentioned that water resources and climate change are issues that the Green Party is looking at as key agenda issues. But we've seen over the past decade that the There's been constant damage to the New Zealand ecology. Our water resources are still highly polluted. There have been a lot of changes to the building codes that have reduced green patches around Auckland. Increased focus on roading has increased pollution. We've seen that the Green Party has also kind of been a silent observer on the side, and there hasn't been really much action on the front and in changing things on the environment. And we know that, especially for young voters today, and I'd count myself amongst them, that you'd be very passionate about the environment and what we're leaving the next generation with. How would you convince the voters out there that the Green Party actually does care about the environment?
Well, good question. I guess it's in the name as well. But we have a very strong track record on advocating within Parliament on these issues. We were the ones, because we've been campaigning for so long around water quality, that actually got that issue onto the political agenda over the last 6 years, actually. So frequently, because we don't get actual recognition for any of the changes, but it's basically because if one of our policies is implemented by the government, they're not going to give us credit for it unless we get a memorandum of understanding with them, which hasn't happened actually. But we've never been in government, but we have managed to influence the government to the point where they introduced national standards around of water quality around rivers, which was actually, although it was a little bit of a win, it was a way of actually doing nothing, because they changed the definition of what swimmable would be. Mm. But it was a start, and it was a recognition that our campaigns had hit through. We've also done things that we've managed to convince both the Labor government and this national government to carry on with the Heat Up New Zealand, or the Warm Up New Zealand program, which has insulated over 300,000 houses. There's still about another 600,000 houses to insulate to get to decent standards. But the result of that has meant that there's been less pressure on the health services, because people are healthier from warm homes. It's required less energy to heat those homes, so it's been good for the environment and the climate. And it's made life a lot easier for everybody. So those sorts of programs where you kind of win-win-win are part of our legacy that we've actually managed to push through. The other things that we've achieved up here in Auckland have been things like the City Rail Link. We managed to convince the government to work with council, because they were really opposed to it, to actually start the building of the City Rail Link. We've been banging on about it for at least 10 years. And the electrification of rail up here as well, which we worked alongside Mike Lee from the regional council, as it was then, to get the government to agree to that as well, to support that. We have, up here in Auckland, the intensification of housing, as you mentioned, is a really is an issue. But I think what we've been promoting is that if we spread out to beyond the metropolitan urban limits, we actually create a polluting city, and it's hard to get around. So we have talked, and we're working alongside council as well, have talked about ensuring that we have intensification around transport hubs, so people can get from place to place, and that we also beef up our public transport system. I mean, we're an international city, and we're only like 1.3 or 4 million people in this city, but the congestion and deadlock in this city is just outrageous. And it's precisely because the government have been putting money into roads and more roads and more roads, and roads of national significance, as they call them, where the ratios, the cost-benefit ratio is really poor, when they could have and should have been putting that money into public transport. So that means rail to the airport, it means rail to the North Shore, it means buses to the west and to the east.
Well, Denise, on that particular note, let's hear a song that was quite a bit to justifying your existence or Green Party's existence. But let's listen to Chin Chin Chinch Pokley.
Thank you. रंगगाड़ी हुबी जाली एक मादाम भी तोर गोसली मूर्जा बोगले क्यों गोसली
चिंच 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 बोगली रंगगाड़ी हुबी जाली एक मादाम भी तोर गोसली मूर्जा बोगले क्यों गोसली
रस पाई तुझो ती माका हम चिट बोरोन तुका रूबी जाली मैडम फट फट सोकला थेवली हम तिचा पाटल्यान सरासरी आमी बोरोलेची गाड़ी दोरली चीं 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 भोगली हंगा गाड़ी उबी जाली एक मादाम भीतर घुसली मुझा बोगले क्यों घुसली
चिंच 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 बोगली सांगा गाडी उभी झाली एक मादाम भीतर घुसली मोर्चा बोगले घेऊन बसली
तिंगा घुसलो भीतर डीसी मादाम गुपी तावून सोदी पालवानावे सिटी कांट मान सोडली डीसी हात पुढे करून विसारली मादाम सांगून आपण वयता अंधेरी घाबरून हसून फसून लागली पगार बरो कडक हसलो डीसी
चिंच 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 भोगली हांगा गाडी उभी झाली एक मादाम भीतर घुसली मोजा बोगले क्यों घुसली चिंच 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 भोगली हांगा गाडी उभी झाली एक मादाम भीतर घुसली मोजा बोगले क्यों घुसली
मादाम आजून बसून आसली जाल्यो मोगा चोको जाली गाडी पावली पोरोली गाडी रावत सुपोरोली तिंगा उबो जालो डीसी हांव दोन रुपया सोपोती मादाम एक घेवन पडलो डीसी
चिंच 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 भोगली चिंच 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 भोगली
It is really good, Denise, having you talk about the proposals for your party having all the connection with public transport, moving faster. That's really good. The only question is, of course, when and how long will it that be? Let's move on to another topic, and this is a very, very, very important topic for the Konkani community. It's very, very close to their heart, and people are very passionate, so I know they're all going to listen to you, especially for this question. And we're talking here about the family. The Konkani community, whole family, extremely, extremely important. They're a bit disdained to a certain extent when they find things being broken down here. Now, you see, the family is the nucleus of a vibrant community. And it's very natural, an idea in creation is being reversed by politicians. The very nature of the family is being reversed. You as a conscious MP and with your strong beliefs in family and your background and your ties and your relation with social actions along with your party and are promoting or seem to be promoting a lot of anti-family policies. Same-sex marriage, discrimination of abortion, supporting assisted suicide, Why kill the community that supports your very existence and growth?
Well, for a start, I reject the idea that gay marriage is a is anti-family. Our leader, James Shaw, was raised, his mother and her partner, who is a woman, raised him, and he's turned out fine, by the way. So families are not, and in modern cultures, and here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, families are not just mum, dad, and the kids. Families, and you know this as well as I do, that it's also extended families as well. But in terms of gay marriage, gay rights have been enshrined in law since 1986, and it was one of the things that I was very proud to vote for was the end of discrimination against gay people so that they could marry, so that they could show their love and make their own families as well. It's a human right that had been denied them till now. In terms of the decriminalisation of abortion, New Zealand has signed up to the to CEDAW, which is the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. And so abortion rights is one of the parts that is used to check whether we are discriminating against women or not. And I maintain, and my party maintains, that it is a woman's right to choose what goes on with her body and no one else's. So currently what happens is that you have to, it's still in the Crimes Act, you have to have, if you are going to access an abortion provided by the state, you have to be see two doctors who will say that your mental health will suffer if you carry on with that pregnancy, which is essentially you have to lie. So we want to take it out of the Crimes Act and treat it for what it is, which is a woman's decision around the health of her body. And then finally, assisted dying. This was a really difficult one for our party because many of our members feel that that everybody should have the right to determine when and how they want to die if they so choose. But we also have a very strong constituency in the disabled, well, the people with disabilities community, and that's where particularly good relationships with that community because of Mojo Mathers, one of our MPs, who's our MP who is the first MP in New Zealand who is profoundly deaf. So they are concerned that if there are laws around assisted dying, that there would be pressure put on place to that people with disabilities would feel and would choose to be, you know, would choose to end their lives themselves. So it's been a very difficult issue for us. So where we came to with our party was our policy talks about that you can only choose to end your life if you have a terminal illness and you have out of a sound mind, so that there can be no other reason for it. That's our policy, but there is a bill that is that has been put forward through Parliament, which is David Seymour's bill on giving people the right to choose to die, which is actually a lot looser than what our policy says. So we haven't actually come to a position as a caucus about how we'll vote on it, and I think we'll probably vote as individuals, as a moral choice. And I think I would accept the guidance of my party, and so I would probably vote against the bill as it is now, just because it allows too much leeway there to put pressure on people to feel that they are a burden to others and that they should end their lives.
I'm glad you made that point. I just want to interject here because, you know, when we're dealing with communities, and we do have some communities who kind of discriminate sometimes with a girl child, and you also have some communities where you have, a child out of marriage, and so the girl feels kind of sort of really in a fix, and so she tries to have the quick way or the quick option out. Now, these are the things where we really, we would really think that the party needs to, or any government would need to really reflect, because if you make it easy and available, then these are shortcuts to, someone really losing their lives or actually terminating things which, if some other kind of understanding where, I'm not too sure, but maybe counseling or other kind of methods to improve rather than take a life. Assist?
Look, I guess we have a fundamental disagreement here, which is you're talking about termination or abortion as the end of a life, whereas I see it as it's a woman's right to choose, and a woman to continue with a pregnancy against her will undermines her life and undermines her human rights. And I don't see it as the termination of a life, and certainly it isn't with the way abortions are performed in this country. That they've got to happen before a certain time period. So I reject that, and I guess that's a fundamental sort of disagreement that we will have. But it is not a quick or easy decision to make for any woman. So to suggest that it is unfair. It's a woman's right to choose. Nobody else's. It's her body.
So Denise, we'll leave it at that because it can go on and on. We'll ask Sandra to ask your views on the education sector as such.
Yes, and this is of particular interest to me because I work in the education sector. In recent times, we've seen that a lot of overseas students have been misled into enrolling for programs with the promise of residency. As spokesperson for Ethnic Affairs, what actions have you and your party initiated, especially for those who then come here and have to work beyond stipulated hours in inhumane conditions often? What does your party stand on immigration then?
So I'm really proud of our party's policy around immigration, and I feel very privileged to have been able to work with some of the students who've actually been exploited as a result of the international student marketing, I guess you'd... UniMeg, the Union for Migrant Workers, calls it education trafficking. So in the last year or so, there's been a number of Indian students particularly who've faced deportation because of the, exactly what you say, the scams that have occurred, and without them knowing about it either. So the government, I think, needs to take a much stronger investigative approach and oversight approach to how students come here. So on the Immigration New Zealand website, right up until very recently, it said that being an international student in New Zealand was potentially a pathway to residency, and there's no problem with that. We don't have a problem with that, and we shouldn't have a problem with that. But what we do have a problem with is where they come to New Zealand and they have they've been sold a false dream. And that means the quality of the education that they've received is poor, and there's been closures of private training establishments that have done exactly that. They are allowed to work for 20 hours a week, but they have been exploited in that area as well, and we've seen that in the kiwi fruit sector down in the Bay of Plenty, where students were actually farmed out to work as labour hire contractors. And basically all the profits were going to the person who was essentially exploiting them. So they weren't even meeting minimum wages or minimum work standards. So what we favour is that it's not the immigrants, not the students' fault. They've come here under very clear auspices of what they want to do. They want to get an education and potential pathway to residency. But only 25% of all international students actually do get permanent residency. So most of them tend to go back or go on to other countries for study. But we need to have much better oversight over people who are employing students or employing migrants on temporary work visas, so there needs to be a much closer look at the employers who utilise that labour force, and we need to have really clear guidelines around education agents in countries of origin for where students come from, and we need to have much better investigation into the private training establishments in this country, which is where these students are coming to.
I'd like to interrupt here, Denise. We're talking about immigration and we see these kinds of things that are happening. A lot of nice things are happening, and of course a lot of things that shouldn't be happening. But if you look at the education, that's the education as such, and we know that education is always from womb to tomb. But here we have the national standards, and that has come under a lot of criticism. So you have again two hands there, one clapping for it, the other not. What exactly are your party stand on that? You know, what do you all feel? Because here you have the grading system, and then you look at the performance of a child. So we tend to emphasize or overemphasize on the grading system, but not on the overall performance. And though we may say it is happening, but when it comes to the final outcome, it's mainly on the national standards, which talks about the performance in grading.
Yeah, we're opposed to that. Look, we absolutely agree that parents should have a really clear understanding of how their children are doing at school. But, I mean, I've been on a school board up until last year. My daughter was in the school system. And the national standards system has not provided me with any additional information about how my daughter was doing. And talking to teachers, what it's done is that it's actually forced them into a tick box type of exercise. This child's above, this child's below. And children learn at different speeds. So to have new 5-year-olds tested and told that they've failed can undermine them for life. National standards don't tell you if your child's a good child. They don't measure leadership skills. They don't measure your creative ability or how you problem solve or how you get on with your peers. They don't measure how courteous you are. All those things that go into making a well-rounded person. And what it does is it increases the amount of work that teachers have to do, but it doesn't increase the meaningfulness of the information that parents are receiving, so we would get rid of them.
I agree with that because I'm a teacher myself and I get that point, but Sandra, would you like to go up?
Continuing on with youth and what they have to look forward to, your party is against raising the drinking age, you're against the ban on prostitution, you want cannabis to be available across the counter. If you look additionally at New Zealand ranking in child well-being amongst OECD countries, we're amongst the worst in spite of being a first world nation. You're working in an electorate that has a sizable youth population. Do you think your policies are aligned with these facts? Will they worsen the New Zealand statistics for well-being?
Well, a couple of things there, actually. I think you've conflated a few issues that don't necessarily relate to the bad outcomes for young people, like decriminalisation of prostitution. That's really one of the measurements that we should be looking at for a civilised society. In terms of the drinking age, alcohol advisory, society, I think they're called, have done an enormous amount of work on this, and we have a culture here that contributes to some real harm and harmful ways that we use alcohol in this country. But that's facilitated by the advertising. It's facilitated by the availability of alcohol, not just about the drinking age, but about, there's outlets, liquor stores in every neighbourhood, and that didn't always happen. When we had fewer fewer outlets, then there was actually, less sort of crime associated with alcohol abuse. But we see alcohol the same as we see cannabis, actually, as a health issue. So the problem with cannabis is that because it's a crime, you've actually got a whole bunch of really scary criminals involved in the propagation and distribution of it. And so you can't get people to stand up and say, well, I've got a problem with this, or I want to know about the health impacts of this. But if you decriminalise it and also regulate it, then you get rid of those criminals and you can then do education around it, introduce an age limit, and also treat it if there are problems, and there will be. There will be problems because there already are problems. Then treat it as a health issue. But by criminalising it, you just turn a whole bunch of people who have got addiction problems into criminals. But I think that the age thing for alcohol was actually about extending sort of adult accessibility to younger people and trying for some consistency, because you can get married with you at 16, actually, but you can't vote. You can enter the army, but you can't, you can't vote and you can't drink. And so reducing it from 20 to 18 was a step in the direction of saying, well, let's try and get these rights and responsibilities at the same age group.
Well, Denise, just going to shift tack here and go to one of major needs of all communities in New Zealand, and that is we have a huge white elephant in the room in the housing crisis, and we see it has spiraled out of control. It's really difficult to get a house, especially for a new person who wants, or a new couple who want a house. It's not possible. They can't even maybe think about it, but they can't get one. Now, VC parties have got a lot of, they've got a lot of plans. So what exactly is your party's or the Green Party's monetary, fiscal and regulatory action plan?
Right. So the housing crisis, and there is a crisis, there's kind of two parts to it. One is the demand and one is supply, of course. So we've got a housing shortage. It's quite simple. And so we need a huge program of building houses. We don't actually need to extend the metropolitan urban limits to do it. I was talking with Councillor Wayne Walker this morning, who said that that there is something like 430,000 properties that can be built on within the city limits as they stand at the moment. It just requires will to do it. And that the special housing areas that the government set up have actually fueled speculation, which has increased prices. So it hasn't fixed things at all. It's just like added gasoline to the fire. So we have to build more houses, and we favour a state housing program where the state actually builds as many houses as we possibly can. We're saying 10,000 houses a year. It may even have to be more, but that means we actually need skilled labour to do that, which means that we need to get our immigration settings right so that we can do it. I think they need something like 65,000 workers. So that's one thing that we have to do, is to increase the supply. But the other thing we need to do is we need to stop speculation. There's something like 33,000 empty houses just sitting empty, because it's easier for those owners to have an empty house and just get the capital gains from it than it is to rent it out. And that scarcity model is actually increasing housing costs for rentals. So we've talked very clearly about introducing a capital gains tax, and also about preventing the sale of land and houses to people who are not permanent residents or citizens, which is common in many other countries like, China and Canada and places like that.
Today we had in the morning the headlines screaming that Mr. John Key has sold his house to a Chinese buyer.
Well, the thing with particularly as we get closer to elections is the increase in xenophobia as well, though, eh? But yeah, those headlines do nothing to try and make for a more peaceful and harmonious race relations in this country. Eh?
So, Denise, we have one last question, and Sandra would like to shoot at it.
Well, I'm going to continue with the youth side of things, but I'm going to connect it now to the employment issues that youth are facing. For the New Zealand economy, there's a lot of reliance on tourism and the primary sector as two of our biggest contributors to the economy. And from a youth perspective, there aren't too many industries that really we can aspire to in terms of long-term careers. There's more focus on OEs, going to different countries and things like that. But from the education perspective, given that education has to be cutting edge, we're all trained to be global workers these days. You have to know how to function in any kind of economy, in any kind of company, anywhere. But you don't have enough local and domestic experiences from there to kind of stake forward and say, this is what I've done. What is the game plan for youth? How are you going to, you know, help them look at aspirational careers inside of New Zealand?
Yeah, well, I think they need the opportunity, and I think the reliance on primary industry as a way of shoring up our economy is not going to cut it. But look, as we move to a zero carbon economy, we need people with innovative thinking to actually be working in those skilled areas that we can find the solutions to the troubles of our time, like climate change. So we need to be ensuring that as many of our kids as possible are getting a good education. So it needs to be free. Tertiary education needs to be free, like it was for my generation and everybody who's in Parliament running the show. So that there's opportunities for them to learn and expand their knowledge and then invest it back into our communities and in our country here. But we also need to have help from government for businesses, like putting an enormous amount of money into research and development. We're really low in terms of what our government puts up into R&D comparatively. It's showing. It means that we're not coming up with the cutting-edge industries that will offer really great opportunities for our young people. And we need to do that because we need to diversify our economy.
Well, thank you, Denise. We have run out of time. And I should say a big thank you to you to find time to be with us and share your own beliefs, your party's policies, and what you would do if you were in the government, and how we would solve the community's problems. Would you like to leave a message for our listeners, Denise?
I think it's really important for people to participate in democracy. So I would just encourage the Konkani community to find out as much as they can about their local candidates, about the parties they want to vote for. And polling booths open on Monday, so start thinking about voting then.